You are listening to
Hands
of Mind.
And we're back.
Brought to you by Hands.
This time, with the long shots. It's Patrick Bexell. It's Anton Rosegård. It's the Swedish duo. The Super Swedes of Ice on the Prize. Well, there are no other Swedes, so of course we're the Super Swedes. Anton, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. You know, there are too many players on this list now. We have to talk about 14 or 15 players today in the long shots alone, because we have 54 players ranked this year.
It should be like the long shots.
Very, very long shots. Like an Alexander Gordon slap shot, basically.
Indeed, and we can start with Alexander Gaudin, who is taking over that last spot on the list from Arvid Henriksson.
Yeah.
A little bit of a similar situation. He's there. Rights are not expiring to the same degree. He's been all over the place. Obviously, he left Sochi, ended up in Rostov. And to be fair, and not to make this overly politic or anything, I'm just happy that he's playing hockey and is not on the front line in Ukraine.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Being a 21-year-old hockey player and not being, you know, all that high profile, you don't know really if you're going to end up being gun food instead of, getting to continue your career. It looks like a very long shot that he will ever make it across the pond and play, at least for the Montreal Canadiens. When you saw Arsen Khisamutinov a couple of years ago, he was also drafted as an overager, but, you know, he didn't have that prolific shot that Gordon has, obviously, but he had other elements in his game that potentially could have made him, a fringe player for the AHL team or, you know, bottom sixer there. Alexander Gordon is not that kind of player, and now he still has troubles. Now he's 22 years old, and he still has troubles making it out of the VHL, the Russian second tier. So, you know, he scored once. He had one assist in six games for HK Sochi. It was a good, you know, it was a sixth round pick, where you can just like you can take a flyer on a player with a great shot and hope that he can develop the other elements of his game and become somewhat of a decent skater. It doesn't look like it has worked out, and we wish him all the best going forward. And you know, someone has to take that Henriksson spot at the bottom of the list, unfortunately.
Yeah, and obviously when he was drafted, he was part of the SCAR system, which is also a good development program, obviously. With Bachner there as well, Canadian coach. It's interesting to maybe think they had some other insights to Gaudin. Unfortunately, it didn't pan out. It is what it is. Rankings are between 54 and 40,
yeah,
with one vote being 40. The rest are 54 and 53s. Everyone has sort of given up on him, and it's just time to move on, really.
Yeah.
I'm even sure how much he will feature on the European prospects. I might do comments on him, but maybe not every week in the updates going forward. On 53, we have Danily Sobolev playing in the OHL for Windsor Spitfires. 48 games, 9 points, 1 goal, 8 assists, but impressive numbers in regards to plus-minus, which is not always the best stat, but it points to a defensive-first defender.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it's difficult with these defense-first players when they're playing in the CHL, because obviously William Trudeau, for example, was that kind of a guy as well, and he's come in and done very well when he's been in Laval, developed rapidly. So maybe we have him a little bit too low, but I think it's also because being 2 years removed from his draft, you kind of like, what I understand is like that he's still, you have his rights retained for 2 more years.
He's drafted out of Russia.
Exactly. So it was something with the draft status because of COVID or something, because he didn't play any games in the OHL before the draft. But it's difficult to know whether he has the upside that will make the Canadians willing to offer him a 3-year entry-level deal. Perhaps they will just let his rights go in the end and try to sign him to an AHL deal and see if he can work himself work his way up from there. It will be an important year for him. Obviously, he's kind of been given a get out of free, jail for free card, being able to play his third straight year in the OHL with rights retained by an NHL team. But yeah, as of right now, I had him at 52nd. I feel felt like comfortable that he was, you know, in that bottom three of players that I don't expect the Canadians to have high hopes for going forward.
Yeah, indeed, and it is different. And when we speak about these players on the long shot list, in some ways, I don't really think rankings matter between themselves because it's a punt really, and you don't really know where it's going to end up until you have more data. You might say they are on the bottom part of the list or they're on the upper part of the list, but more than that, it's anyone's guess in many ways where they end up.
There was a bigger spread though. Like it wasn't like Gordon, who was 54, 53, and 140. Here it was 143, 147, 148, 139, and then 140, 149, and then 52, 53, 54. So it was not as if he was competing with Alexander Gordon for the 54th spot. He was more competing with the players just above him, about being 51 or 52.
He was closer to coming in at 49 rather than 54, which is the so it is a plateau here with a different with a lower ranking players where Jack Smith picks the 52nd spot, same there. Also a player where you have some data and his first year with the University of Minnesota Duluth wasn't that impressive, but well, you have his rights for 4 more years, so the or 3 more years, so there is will be more data to go on, and who knows what can happen.
Well, it's always so difficult because we've seen players like Sean Farrell, Rhett Pitlick do very well in the USHL, and then if you're not even standing out at that level, obviously Jack Smith was a hell of a US high school player for St. Cloud Cathedral when he was drafted. He had a couple of injury problems, and he still had a couple of injury problems after the draft. But he was a surprising fourth round pick back then as well because we didn't have any data on him. I remember writing the Getting to Know article about Jack Smith, and I had to go on obscure articles from Minnesota local press because there was nothing about him in any of the draft guides. Montreal thought that they found a diamond in the rough. I think it was just, you know, it was just pebbles at this point. Whether it was the injuries that, you know, has hampered him, you know, he was supposed to be you know, an offense first player with a lot of skill and playmaking. And if you are that kind of player, combining for 2 goals and 6 assists in the last 2 seasons with the USHL and the NCAA, it does not look very appetizing for an NHL franchise to move forward on. But as you said, they have his rights for a few more years. He can still turn it around, but there's a reason why he's in the long shots at the moment.
First of the goalkeepers on the list is Emmett Coteau, playing for Clarkson in this upcoming year. He has improved from last year or 2022 season to the 2023 season, going from 899 to 917 save percentage. On the other hand, his goal against average has gone up.
Yeah, he's also like last year he was fifth last on the top 25 under 25. Now he's fourth last. Obviously, it's been well, Arvid Henriksson has left, Otherwise, he had last year, he had Gordon, Henriksen, Jack Smith, and Jack Gorniak behind him. He's another one of these big goalies that Montreal has taken a flyer on in the later rounds. It has been one per draft basically in the last 4 or 5 years, except for this year when they just went bananas with picking goalkeepers. He's 6'4", 209 pounds, listed on Elite Prospects. It's going to be interesting to see him play the NCAA. 9-1-7 in the regular season for Waterloo Blackhawks is, you know, it's good. It's a good save percentage. Yeah, the playoffs.
I always have to say that when I saw the numbers, I obviously looked at the playoffs going up, but even a 8.93, 3.26 save percentage and goals against average is pretty decent, especially with the sample size that is 3 games.
Yeah, for sure.
So, it will be interesting to see Clarkson, decent program as well. So, question is how many games he's going to get as a first year.
As a freshman. Yeah. But it's difficult with goalies because they
really are voodoo.
Yeah, we were talking about that yesterday. Like Sam Montembeault, for example, he still feels like a talented young goalie. He's 27. Well, he turns 27 this year. But he has just, you know, found his stride, basically, in the NHL at the age of 26. And it makes you kind of hesitant to write off these goalies. Frédéric Deschauve, who the Canadiens did not sign, for example, he had a great season with Kristianstad in Hockey Allsvenskan, coming from 2 seasons of basically playing nothing. And then he was great for Kristianstad and he moved to Frölunda and he was given the backup spot. And it was difficult to maintain that level of being the guy.
Consistency
was
rather than anything else.
Yeah.
Especially as Frölunda had to play in Lars Johansson, who wasn't up to par coming back from KHL in Russia.
Exactly, and a player who has been touted to be the best goaltender outside of the NHL, basically, in Lars Johansson. So backing him up is probably great for Deschauve going forward. So we don't know. He's still just 21, 22. Maybe 4 years, he can be, you know, a hell of a goalkeeper. And the same can go for someone like Emmett Coteau. We've seen Caden Primo, for example, go from a very long shot, seventh round pick to being very highly touted by the Canadiens organization and being a great goaltender in the NCAA. So all of these goaltenders will be fun to follow and see who comes out on top, basically, because Jakub Dobeš is already there. He's going to compete with Primo going forward. We have Joe Verbeek there as well, and we have several more coming up.
Indeed, and as I said, goalkeepers are voodoo. You never know when they're going to explode onto the scene. Not everyone is going to be Carey Price, who took some time to get comfortable as well, or Henrik Lundqvist, that stayed a couple of more years in Sweden and won a couple of championships as well. I am a little bit surprised because I know I'm not flashy on him. I know I don't write enough about him either. And he's gone to the club where KHL contracts go to die.
Well, he plays in China.
But Dmitry Kostenko has played more or less every game in KHL this year.
Yep.
KHL is not a bad league.
No, it's not. Even though they can't really import players
to the same degree anymore.
Like they used to. Playing 52 games at the age of 20 in the KHL is still a really good experience.
Exactly, and while not all of them has been, you know, monster minute games, I think, you know, it is a professional player, and putting a professional player somewhere with that caliber of stats at 50, I would still not put him in the top 25. So it's not that, and we said that, you know, it's anyone's guess at this point. We have the data. He has taken steps forward. This will be a really interesting prospect actually following. Can he follow up a season like this and take another step or two, arguably in a bad team, but possibly being traded to a good team come deadline?
I mean, he still belongs to Spartak Moscow. He was just on loan to Kunlun Red Star in China. So if he can take a spot on Spartak Moscow's defensive line, he could be in for a bounce, you know, a big bounce of a year. And just looking at, well, Oliver Kapanen, for example, who we'll get to in a later podcast, but getting from, you know, having your first real season of top tier hockey and just getting accustomed to all of these do's and don'ts of the pace and the physicality, that can do very much for a young player. And now he's gonna turn 21 in September, Kostenko, that is. And if he can take a spot on Spartak Moscow, Montreal still has his rights for 2 more years, and it's not impossible that he will be someone that they will look to sign in those 2 years. He's signed for 1 more year with the Spartak Moscow. Maybe he will be brought over for a look in Laval at the end of this season. Who knows? It all depends on this season and whether he can be a KHL, more than just a KHL body.
Indeed, he needs to become a KHL regular in a way. 49, we got Joe Verbetic. A little bit of a, yeah,
Wild
I had him
card.
higher, obviously. So, but I've always heard good things about him. I haven't followed him that closely, but from what I've heard, he's done well. Obviously, my rankings are a huge outlier in this case, at 37. So I would still have him as a project. Rather than the long shot, still, he's had a pretty decent season.
Well, he played 28 games for the ECHL team in Trois-Rivières and had an 896 save percentage, which is coming from the OHL. Everything is
Also,
more.
Trois-Rivières was not very good this year.
Well, no, but it's still, it's difficult coming up from the OHL, obviously, and playing a senior hockey. The way I see it, he played 4 games with Laval, didn't exactly impress. He had a 4.05 goals against average, 871 save percentage. But as you said, goalies are voodoo. It's difficult to know how they will improve summer after summer. He's a monstrously big human. He's 6'6". He fills out the net. He's still only 20, but as of now, I had him ranked the lowest out of the goaltenders. I had him at 51. I don't know if I was the lowest on him. Yeah, I was, combined with a couple of others. So I don't see a big future in the NHL for Joe Vrabetic as of present, but maybe in a year that will change. 49th he is now. Last year he was ranked at, I can't even find him in the rankings here. He was ranked 34th, so he has fallen a little bit out of the projects list into the long shots.
Indeed, and now we're going to talk about a Swede. First
Well,
Swede on the list,
part
Sam
Swede, yeah, for
Harris.
sure. Yeah, it sounds like a Swede, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, he's got double citizenship, and
Yeah.
hence why we can make this joke, because everyone in Canada claims both Nylander sons to Canada, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, 2023 fifth round pick. He's
Yeah.
he, yeah. I know
Yeah.
nothing about him really.
No, exactly. Who's this guy? He's gonna play for the University of Denver this year. He was a point per game player in the Sioux Falls Stampede. Great. Why not take a flyer on an overager who's a point per game player in the USHL? As we said with Jack Smith, when you don't see that kind of production even in the USHL, then you start to become a little bit wobbly about where a little bit wonky about where this player is actually heading. Sam Harris has at least been productive at that level, and now it's up to him to show that he can take that and turn it into something more at the NCAA level. And Denver has a good program, and he's going to have 4 years probably to develop himself. We've seen Jake Evans and others, Brett Stapley, do well at the NCAA level after being long shots. So who knows what Sam Harris can end up doing. I like the Harris pick more than I like a couple of the other picks who were picked earlier than him in this draft, because at least you can see the production is there.
Well, also the trend is there. I mean, like even for being an extra year in with the Sioux Falls Stampede, he went from 35 points in 1 year to 56 the next.
Exactly.
So you can see there is a positive trending trajectory, and therefore it's worth a pick. Also, Coming back to this, being a teacher, I know you're tired of me talking about other stuff than hockey, but University of Denver has a good, it's a good school as well. So he's bound to get a good education. And if hockey doesn't work out, you have something else to fall back on.
And we also have to remember one thing, that he played for the Sioux Falls Stampede, and Jack Smith also played for the Sioux Falls Stampede. So back in 21, 22, they probably already had an eye on Sam Harris because they were there for the 10 games that Jack Smith was actually playing. They probably will have seen Sam Harris as well. So they've had a little bit of a look on him for some time now, and probably now that he had this production this year, they probably felt that he was worth bringing into the organization. So I don't think that it's someone that they just looked up on YouTube or something and felt like, oh, the sixth round, we have a pick, just take whoever. I think that they actually had a plan with this guy and selecting him. So yeah, as you said, University of Denver will probably do him nicely. And as of now, is he the lowest of the
New
drafted?
leader,
Yeah,
yeah.
of the ones drafted in 2023. Yeah, he is. But yeah, I had him 50th. He had a discrepancy between 41 and 52. So yeah, was it
It's anyone's
close?
guess
Yeah, it's
again.
anyone's less. He was quite close to 47th, which is Blake Biondi.
And the question, when you look at the stats from Minnesota Duluth again, has Blake Biondi stagnated? Certainly, it looks that way. And I think even if he had half the amount of games from compared to last year, he's got what, a quarter of the points. He's gone from a plus player to a minus player. I don't know how the team performed in regards to the previous season, because obviously that will impact the stats as well. But it seems that you have had someone that has started a development going forward, and then he's fallen off a little bit.
It's so difficult with Blake Biondi. Obviously, drafted in 2020, the same round as Jack Smith and Sean Farrell. And we should never forget that the Canadians chose to go with Jack Smith and Blake Biondi over Sean Farrell before they selected Sean Farrell. Obviously, if they knew what kind of development Sean Farrell would have, they would have rushed in to take Farrell first of those three guys. But yeah,
You still
he
got your
said.
guy.
Yeah, you did, but it was not. It's like saying it was great drafting by the New England Patriots selecting Tom Brady at 199. If they knew how good he was going to be, they would have selected him in the first round, obviously.
Well, they wouldn't have been able to select him in the first round if everyone knew how good he's going to be, because
No,
then he would have
exactly,
gone first overall.
but it's not great drafting when you pass on a lot of players. If you just end up with. Well, someone has to pick him, obviously, but it's just always going to be a conundrum with those three players intertwined because they were selected in the fourth round of 2020. But yeah, Blake Biondi, he was a Mr. Hockey in Minnesota, obviously a prestigious title, being the best high school player there. And then he comes to Duluth and he starts his first season, his freshman season, with 5 points in 26 games. So you kind of write him off, even if it's just his freshman season. And then he was great in his sophomore season with 28 points in 42 games. And it looked like he really found his stride. And then injuries and not a very good form on him, and not a very good performance overall. 6 points in 17 games, and then all of a sudden you don't know, because he fluctuates so much in production, so you don't really know what you're gonna get. There is talent there, and obviously, if there is someone I trust when it comes to talent, when it comes to just what's it called?
Development.
Well, no, to evaluate talent. It's Hadi, and Hadi is the high vote on him. So that tells us something. If Hadi believes in Blake Biondi, then I am inclined to believe a little bit more in him as well, and just think that this was maybe just a blip in the radar, and he can pick it up for his senior season.
The God of Mischief is back and better than ever.
Loki.
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 Loki. Wow. Great to see you again.
Critics agree Loki Season 2 is
marvelous.
Great. And it's finally here.
How much do you know?
Let's assume I don't know much.
A mind-bending adventure.
spectacularly cinematic.
I've been waiting for a moment like this.
It surpasses all expectations.
A little over the top, don't you think? I thought it was spot on.
Loki Season 2, now streaming only on Disney+.
And then obviously, since I love Russian goalies, I'm highest on Yevgeny Volokhin. Coming into or being drafted this year, playing for Mamonti Urgay in MHL. He's a junior player in the MHL. Like he's a first year player. He's 18 and played with the under 20s. That speaks volume to me. The Russian goalie program has more often than not been strong this last couple of years. So 6'3", very lanky with 168 pounds only. Mm. But the development path here is good. We're back to that thing with Russia where scouting is probably not the best, travel-wise and political-wise. Then it's also the fact that because of the KHL, NHL, or non-existent KHL, NHL agreement, and I might not be right, correct with this, but I think you keep the rights forever before they come over. And I think that is part of the problem or part of the project going forward. You can keep him for as long as possible.
Yeah, I really believe that this could be a sleeper pick, a really good sleeper pick. When you look at the save percentage this year as an 18-year-old, because you have to remember that a lot of the, I think both, were both Miller, for example, I think that a couple of the other goalies were also picked 1 year after they were eligible, or am I completely off now? At least, like, he's born in April 2005. He's recently turned 18 and a combined save percentage of, you know, upwards to 930 this season in the MHL as a rookie player, and being so good in the playoffs as well for a struggling team with 931 save percentage. It's impressive for real. And looking at if he can fill out his frame a little bit, and this is the kind of pick that I really like in the later rounds. A goalie who has shown promise at the age of 18, and there is no reason, and it's also a proof why there's no reason to become too high on a goaltender in the early rounds, because there are those sleeper picks to find in the later rounds, where the development path maybe isn't as clear, but there is talent there. And I think that Volokhin can surprise quite a few people these upcoming years.
I think he was second, or the two goalies for Ugri was second in MHL rankings combined. He was top 10 in both playoffs and regular season performance. I agree with you. This could really be a sleeper pick. Next season, we'll have to tell. I have no idea if his partner is aging out, so he will take the front row seat for his team. But also, shout out to Mamut, because they have one of the coolest logos in ice hockey. Check it out. Be sure to follow this prospect going forward. On 45.
I could just say, like, answer that question. The competitor who he's up against in Mamonti Ugri is called Yegor Zavragin, and he was drafted in the third round this year by Philadelphia Flyers. So he is even younger than Volokhin. So it will probably be a 1A, 1B tandem for them. He's only 17 as a present, and he had a 920 save percentage. He also played one game up in the VHL this season. So yeah,
interesting,
it sounds like
dynamic good, there. Eh?
Yeah. Also, I was wrong about Quentin Miller. I thought he was born in 2003, but he's the same age as Volokhin. Yeah.
On 45, though, we have Florian Šekaj.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Czech star player being drafted by Montreal in the fourth round, 101 air assault unit. Maybe we should call him that. Coming from Hamilton, obviously not very highly ranked among different scouting agencies. However, the name sort of speaks to Montreal nowadays.
Yeah, obviously, I have a hard time seeing that Montreal would have selected Florian Šekai in as early as they did, if not for the fact that he was Arbor Šekai's brother and they know what kind of personality Arbor and Florian probably both bring combined. So, looking at his production in the OHL, it obviously isn't something that wows you. It's not even something that tells you that this player should get drafted. With 25 points in 68 games and a minus 17 plus minus, so there has to be some kind of dynamic here where they know that the tenacity and the grit that Florian Šekai will bring to any lineup is something that you can build with. Kind of like Michael Pezzetta or for that kind of bottom six heavy workload guy who can just bring physicality to an otherwise talented playmaking team. I am still puzzled by the selection. If not for I hope that he will prove me wrong and that it's not, something that they've just selected out of nepotism. I had him 48th. I don't have a lot of hope for Florian Šekai to bring his game to the next level, but he's more than welcome to prove me wrong. I can see that there was a discrepancy here. Like the high vote was 29, the low vote was 52. So,
I wonder who the low vote was.
yeah, I wonder. It could be some guy named Patrick. So,
Well, it's fair to shout out someone on the pod though, and I was just I think I checked all the draft profiles or the draft magazines that I have, and I think it was only one that had him drafted as or mentioned as an honorable mention, and the rest didn't. On the other hand, it was more or less the same with Alexander Romanov, so who knows?
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I had 1 year ago, I had Arbor Šekai at 36th place because I didn't think that he would transition very well from the OHL, and I st still thought that it was mainly a feel good story of him being a cashier and then becoming like, well, a grocery bag picker or whatever, and then becoming a sign for an NHL team, and I didn't expect him to feature as much as he did and actually doing it really well. So I was wrong on him, and maybe I'm wrong on Florian Šekai as well. But as of present, I don't see him being more talented or being worthy of a position higher up these rankings.
One player that has fallen quite a bit, partly because of players coming in, but also partly due to a season that he struggled with, if I remember correctly, mononucleosis. Petteri Nurmi did play for Hopeko quite well when he did play, had troubles coming back into the team after his illness, still performed quite well. It's an interesting pick. I don't know his contract status, but I would assume he goes to the AHL next year.
Yeah, I was gonna say like he may have fallen a little bit from grace in the Liga, but he has on the list. He has the exact same ranking as last year. So even though there's been an influx of talent and a lot of new players coming in, he maintains his 44th spot. If you compare to his first season with HBK, where he had 4 points in 58 games, this season he had 15 and 48. So obviously, he has picked up his assisting game, 14 assists this season compared to just three in the first year. And he was an overager, 2 year an overager, I think. He's born in 2002 in January. So he was a long shot from the start when he was selected. But as you said, he has contract for one more year. And this is the kind of selection that you make because you want him to come over in 2 years and play for Laval and test the waters over there. So Petri Nurmi, I think that he can bring a bit of defense first, obviously, but I think that he can add something to a Laval team as long as he continues to play well in Liga.
Outbreak passes are good. Vision is good. He has some good skills, especially in the passing game. Offensively, maybe not, but passing wise, is strong. And defensive game is also pretty strong. So it will be interesting. I know Timo said that he thought that Petteri Nurmi would challenge maybe for the national team in one of the smaller tournaments, the Czechia tournament or Swiss tournament, or would be one of those two tournaments really. Last year, obviously, Mono put an end to that. It will be interesting to see because he is one of the better young defenders in Liga. So it's a smart pick. We have the same as we always say, the trajectory was good. It continued to be good last year. So very, very interesting pick. And I'm very high, but I wasn't highest because, and not even you were the highest. On the next one, at 43, we have Filip Eriksson.
I had him 35th. I was sure I was going to be the highest, but I wasn't. So,
but out of Växjö Lakers, I know you guys think Lakers is a basketball team, but here in Sweden, it is a hockey team. It's also a very good hockey team. They're the champions. He got to play with them. I think because of his 31 seconds in the playoffs, he did get a winner's medal. So he is a Swedish champion. And going into this season, we're going to have more about Eriksson next week on the podcast. But going into this year, he will challenge for the 13th, 12th spot on a Växjö team. I'm relatively sure he will get more or sometime in the SHL, sometime on Champions Hockey League. And the organization of Växjö has tried to get him for a couple of years, but he has stayed in his local team in Troja Ljungby and developed there very, very smartly, gotten a bigger responsibility with that team, being able to build up Finnish school, and now, or last year, moved to Växjö permanently, broke his metacarpal in one early game in the SHL, and more or less had to sit out the rest of the season. He came back in March, I think. And still, it probably kept him off the radar for many clubs. Very smart pick. This player is more or less a pro player already.
Yeah, it looks like it kind of looks like the Engström pick a year ago, not to make any other suggestions when it comes to comparisons there, because but it's just like this kind of forgotten player in the J20s who's been a point per game player and kind of has fallen under the radar. Between there obviously is a lot of talent coming out of the SHL and the following J20 National League every year, and considering Filip Eriksson's being developed in a smaller program at home in Ljungby and then moving to Växjö and only playing 11 games in the J20. I think, as you said, that he has kind of been forgotten by a lot of franchises and not reaching a higher draft status. And that is probably to Montreal's gain here, being able to pick him up in the sixth round. It will be very fun to watch him with the Växjö Lakers because, as you said, it's a good program to play in. It's a team that the current national team head coach, he came out of, for Sweden, he came out of Växjö. He coached them for many years. They continue to play well. And obviously, it's easier to make a good impression playing with good teammates than having to struggle in a bottom tier team. We've seen with Jacob Olofsson, for example, when you have to play for a team that's just struggling for existence in the top tier, it's much harder as a young player to actually feature and do well and play with the quality teammates and eventually get some team in the on the man advantage or the box play with a penalty kill.
In Sweden, it's kind of funny because the coach of Växjö Lakers is Jörgen Jönsson, and in Sweden, he's won everything that you can win.
Kenny.
He's in NHL. He's probably used to being compared to his brother Kenny Jönsson, who didn't win everything with the Islanders, but was an integrated part of their history for a long time. Filip Eriksson, very interesting pick. I'm looking forward to following this guy for the rest of the season. We will have more about Philip coming on the pod, I would assume next weekend, when we don't have any top 25, under 25 profiles coming out. Which brings us to number 42, Luke Mittelstadt.
Speaking of brothers, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Speaking about brothers, Luke Mittelstadt.
Yep.
This ranking was pretty consensus, though. There's one outlier at 33, but the rest in early 40s, mid 40s.
Yeah, basically.
And obviously having the same ranking as the guy before, combined ranking.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting. Because we still see a little bit of a jump between 40 and 41, but Mittelstadt had, as you said, he had rankings between 33 and 47, which could, some people see him high up the projects list, close to the near misses. Some people see him more of a long shot. And he ends up, at number 42 or tied 41st position. Obviously being the little brother of Casey Mittelstadt from the Buffalo Sabres, taking a flyer on him as an overager in the seventh round, he was ranked by a few outlets higher than that. So 21 points in 38 games as a left-handed D-man and for the University of Minnesota. That sounds quite good for being an undrafted player. And as we said about Petri Nurmi, for example, who also was that left-handed D overager, you kind of make this selection with the Laval team in mind and thinking that, well, Miguel Tourigny, for example, was also that kind of a pick where you thought that, oh, maybe he can make an impact for Laval within a year or two. So we can stay competitive in Laval while we lift players up from Laval to Montreal Canadiens. We still have these 20-year-olds who are schooled in Liga or SHL or the NCAA coming up and filling their spots. And I firmly believe that Mittelstadt can be a part of that maybe as soon as next year.
It's also like you choose these players because they have a longer development path. It's very easy to put someone like David Reinbacher in to a higher ranking because you know what you're going to get, a first round pick, this, blah, 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 bang, bang, bang. Whereas with these kind of players, you pick them because there is a long development path, but there is a possibility of them reaching it. And it's smart maybe in this case to, as we said with Petri Nurmi, we've seen it with Lucas Vaidemo, we've seen it to a certain degree with Mattias Norlander. There are other overagers as well, but you pick an overager because you have a little bit more data to look at and see where they're going from the draft year.
Also, as you say, and also you see the high-end potential in one or two aspects of his game. For Mittelstadt, for example, it's his offensive game which stands out. And if you can see that translate well, as it did in his freshman season in the NCAA, then you kind of see that, oh, there is something to work with here. And if we can just iron out a couple of deficiencies that he has, maybe we can get a pretty decent player out of this. And maybe that is more worthy of a seventh round pick than selecting, for example, a 17-year-old. Sorry?
Gourdain.
Exactly.
Well, who is very high, has one skill that is very high.
Yeah, exactly. But it was the same kind of pick where you select an overager and you kind of want him to round out a couple of other aspects of his game. With Gourdain, it didn't work, but it still doesn't mean that the process was flawed. Yeah. With Mittelstadt, for example, maybe he has already a couple of more elements to his game that you can actually work with. With Gourdain, it's kind of difficult if you can't stand on two skates, even if you have a great shot. Mittelstadt can skate and he can do it well, and he can play a two-way game at the NCAA level. Can he do it in the AHL and maybe the NHL as well? That remains to be seen, but it's been promising as of now. I mean, just the fact that he was selected for the under 20 team in the World Juniors, featuring for Team USA there, that speaks volumes for an undrafted player. So the fact that nobody else scooped him up until pick 197 was kind of strange, to be fair, especially being an overager. But hopefully Montreal is the wiser because of it.
And coming in at 41, We got Tai Smilanek out of the NCAA and University of Wisconsin.
Go Badgers. Yeah.
Go Badgers. And J.J. Watts.
Yeah, exactly. He obviously transferred from Quinnipiac to University of Wisconsin this season to be at a higher profile program. Didn't really light it up. He had one goal, one assist in 14 games. That was all. And this was his junior season. Going into senior year, we have to remember he was drafted by Florida, so which means that he was part of the Bencherov trade. Third round pick back then, and he came from the national team development program, so he was a highly touted talent going into the NCAA. But hopefully this season was just kind of getting accustomed to a different program and all of that, and that he can pick it up in the senior year. But as of now, for me, it kind of looks like a long shot that he would be offered an entry level contract. It kind of reminds me of another University of Wisconsin product in Jack Kornjak, where it's just, it was kind of obvious that the high end talent wasn't really there. Tai Smilanek is obviously, he was a higher touted prospect than Gorniak. He should be able to do better. And especially being one of the leaders now on the team at Wisconsin, it's a really important year for him. And he really has to pick it up.
That's it from the long shots. We'll be back tomorrow with the projects, and we are so happy that you stayed with us the whole show. And really, Anton and I are looking forward to do more of these podcasts. We have a lot of exciting guests coming up. Thank you so much for listening.